Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th of May, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And yes, you heard that right, Steve Ray, one step ahead of law somewhere in the Midwest. Or he's minding the store today at Mac Ave. So if you want to see him in person, that's the way to do it today. All right, let's start with our news story. Microsoft's taking aim at Chromebooks and MacBooks alike with Windows 10 S, a new version of Windows 10 designed foremost for educational use. But schools alone aren't Microsoft's target audience, and while the new operating system shares the same underlying bones as the standard version of Windows 10, there are some stark differences, too. Windows 10 S is a version of Windows 10 that can only run apps from Microsoft's Windows Store. Traditional desktop software will work on Windows 10 S, but only if its developer packages it up as a Windows app in the Windows Store first. For example, Microsoft says they are bringing the full desktop Office apps to the Windows Store to support the Windows 10 S release. Microsoft screens Windows Store apps, and Windows 10 protects things even more by running those apps in secure containers that can't access other parts of the operating system. That keeps software from mucking with your registry or spawning tons of processes, which helps the system run faster and boot as quickly on day 100 as on day 1. The startup process should take less than 15 seconds, which is about twice what it takes for a Chromebook, but I'm not going there. And the login process less than 5 seconds. Those perks are a boon to beleaguered school admins and teachers, and Microsoft's answer to the rapid rise of Google Chromebooks in the classroom. Windows 10S laptops will also be sold to consumers. You can't run standard desktop software. Pay attention to that. You cannot run standard desktop software unless it's been packaged as a Windows Store app. Trying to run other software will prompt a pop-up telling you it's banned and a suggestion for a similar app in the Windows Store. If you really need to run desktop software, Microsoft makes it easy to upgrade from Windows 10 S to Windows 10 Pro, for which you will pay, of course. There is no apparent way to convert to Windows 10 Home, which is the one everybody would be using.
Yeah.
No, and of course, 10 Pro is more expensive than 10, but let's go.
Yeah, that's right.
No, school kids won't be able to do it themselves, and that's a good thing. This is a one-way process. Once you've switched to Windows 10 Pro, you cannot go back to Windows 10 S. Depending on how where your Windows 10 device came from, however, that Windows 10 Pro upgrade may or may not cost you money. Microsoft immediately muddied the messaging waters with the Windows 10S flagship device, the $1,000 and up Surface laptop, which has much more in common with Apple's MacBook Air and the Chromebook Pixel than it does with the legion of Chromebooks most Windows 10S computers will compete with. Most Windows 10S PCs will be much more modest. The HP ProBook X360 Education Edition. HP is very fond of their names. The HP, the HP ProBook X360 Education Edition, and Acer, not to be outdone, has the Acer TravelMate Spin B1 Convertible.
Yep, you got to get the names in there.
Yep, they are the first two. Each of those costs about $300. Most notably, Windows 10 S restricts your browser to Microsoft Edge. That is the only browser you can use, and your search results to Bing. You can, of course, navigate to, say, Google search page or whatever if you want in the browser, but you can't change the default browser. You can't change the default search engine and all system interactions that point to one of those will always point to Edge and Bing. That point's a bit moot, however, as major browsers like Chrome and Firefox aren't in the Windows Store anyway. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10S is coming. Your choices are, I can't wait. Oh, I can wait. I'll be interested. I'll never switch from Microsoft. And Chromebooks forever, baby. So far, 26 of you have voted. And, I can wait is number one, followed closely. I don't know, tied right now with Chromebooks forever, baby.
Yeah, see, what I have a problem with is, again, they're putting themselves in such a narrow slot, like you and I were discussing before. Whereas if I have, like, a Chromebook or anything else, I can go to the Google store and get anything.
Yep.
Because anybody and everybody can write to Google and, you know, to the Android system and put it up there. It's free. But Microsoft, like Apple, has to have full control. No, you can't go elsewhere. You have to get from us. And here's the biggest thing that I'm always worried about.
Yep.
Because, I'm sorry, they have done it to me. Is, you know, you go and get one of these, and then all of a sudden the sales and all that aren't what they expected, so they drop it.
Yep. More importantly for me, right now you buy it, and then in a year, Microsoft says, oh, we would like to rent that to you now.
Yeah.
So to keep it running, you have to pay us every year or we dump it.
Yeah.
And they've already said they're going to do that with the Microsoft Office Online stuff, and that's the only way you're going to be able to do stuff on this thing. So, you know, are you willing to pay Microsoft every year to get at your data?
And the other thing, like they say, is going to their store. You could be very limited in the choices of the applications, say, that you want to do your photos or that with. They will control it. Whereas if you go to an Android system, I want to edit photos, there are a lot of different applications out there that you can get for free.
Yep.
And I just don't see that happen. I'm sorry. Time will tell, but...
Well, their big issue, of course, is the fact that Chromebooks now own the education market.
Yeah.
Grammar schools, high schools, and colleges. I'm teaching a course at RIT. Very high-end, very computer-savvy kids. Half of them are using Chromebooks.
Why not? I mean, they don't get viruses. They don't get spyware.
Right. And for what they're doing, it's perfect. You know, they've got a big desktop in their dorm room.
Mm-hmm.
And for carrying around, it's a Chromebook.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, and Apple has known this for decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old Jesuit saying, give me your child before he's seven and he's mine for life.
Mm-hmm.
Apple always knew that putting Apple computers in grammar schools and high schools meant that when people got to college and then out into the workplace, they would want Apples.
Yep.
And that worked for a long time. The problem with them, of course, is that the people who are buying the computers, the procurement departments, are not Apple people, and they look at the price of an Apple computer versus the price of a Windows computer.
Yep.
Right. Now, it's Chromebooks. If you can do everything you want to do on a Chromebook, and management is so dead simple, I mean, just dead simple.
It's a cakewalk.
And I'm talking about the management console most of us never see. If you have a group, for example, in a grammar school or a high school or whatever, you can own all of those machines with a special management console. And when you do, you now can do anything you want to those things, including, say, you can't load certain software or you can't go to certain websites or whatever you want to do, which is, of course, what schools want.
Yep.
So they're very happy to give their computers to schools.
And they're cheaper.
And they're much cheaper. And they're also durable. They'll last for years. So, you know, I give this computer to Sally in third grade. She uses it for a year. I power wash it over the summer, and Fred gets it next year.
And the other thing, like you were saying, though, is with the Windows, are they going to have to pay for an operating system? And is it going to have holes in it that it can be exploited? The Chromebook doesn't have that. It just doesn't exist.
Right.
Whereas the Windows operating system, I don't care. You're still running an operating system, and it's open for error.
Right, right. And it's a Windows operating system. So we'll see what the future brings, but You know, I have a couple of friends who are very knowledgeable about this stuff, and they say it's too little, too late.
On
Microsoft's part.
They're getting on the bandwagon too late.
You know, we've said that before, and Microsoft's strategy is they lose, everybody laughs at them, they win.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Mm-hmm. All right, we should. We got a few minutes to go to the phone. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Good morning, guys. I just got an old HP Elite book, which is running Windows 10 Pro. It had originally run Windows 7. It's running an i5, had an Intel i5, 4 gigabytes of RAM. I am trying to load iTunes on it, and I keep being able to download it and open it, but then it says a required iTunes component is not installed. Please repair or reinstall. I tried installing an older version of iTunes for an older video card, and that said Apple application support not found.
All right, what brand of laptop did you say this was?
It's an HP Elite Book.
And it's running Windows 10.
Yeah.
Windows 10.
All right, here's the scenario that I'm going to have you go through.
Okay.
You know, a lot of the HPs, and this is, I found a whole list of them, they'll take Windows 10. How long have you had Windows 10 on it?
I don't know. I just got this a few days ago.
All right, here's the issue. I would take that particular model number, mm-hmm. go to the HP website, mm-hmm. and see if they recommend running Windows 10 on that particular laptop. Windows 10 will run on a lot of machines. But will other stuff work? No. And I have seen a whole list of HP systems that will accept Windows 10, and they run it for a little bit, and then the next update, and they crash. Or they just won't run certain applications or do certain things because it wasn't meant to run Windows 10. And they won't have the drivers. In other words, even though you've got the Windows 10 on there and it's, you know, the HP, it's running that too, but you try to get the drivers to work correctly with that particular laptop and they might not support it.
Okay.
The other thing you might want to look at is, I beg your pardon, I had something, never mind. All right, I'm good. There is a component called Apple Application Support.
Right, it says it's not found.
Right, and if that's not installed, iTunes will not run.
Okay.
So you need to install that. I believe you download that from Apple. So if you do a search for that thing, Apple Application Support, you should find it on Microsoft, now Apple's website, and it requires, and you have to pay attention. It's from the Apple's iTunes download page, the same page you downloaded iTunes from. Make sure you get the correct, 32 or 64 bit one.
Yeah.
That should solve your problem.
Okay. Okay. I will give that a try.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yep-er. There are multiple files that come with that are automatically installed on a Mac, which is really what Apple cares about, and using those components on a Windows machine is possible, but you have to have the component itself, which may not automatically download. It should,
yeah,
but like many people complain that it does not.
Yeah, but like I say, and also the other thing you want to check is, like I say, I've ran into four different machines now, HPs.
Yep.
That took Windows 10. They've been running a few months on it. But you go back to the HP website, and they do not recommend, nor do they support running Windows 10. Because Microsoft will say, oh, yeah, it'll run on that machine. Yeah, it'll run their operating system, but the other programs in there always won't work correctly.
Right.
So you kind of got to do your homework on both ends of it. But, mm-hmm. Wait and see.
Yep, we'll see how that works. It's iTunes, pretty good product. A little weird in the way it runs as far as I'm concerned. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright and me, Nick Francesco. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Larry from Spencerport, New York on the line. What's up, Larry?
Kind of got my old radio.
I know. I got that. I did.
Lost track. Sorry,
yeah,
Larry.
I got a couple of questions about Ubuntu again.
Yep.
And I go to open a PDF file, double-click on it, and it opens up in Image Magic. And I go in to try to change the default setting back to Document Viewer, which was the original one on there, or on Foxit, which I've had on there. Every time I click on it, it's set as default. It jumps back up to Image Magic and doesn't do Document Viewer. If I right-click on it and say Open With, I can open it with Document Viewer or Foxit, but I can't seem to set the default.
This is in the GUI when you right-click on the file?
Yes. Well, I right-click on the file and go to Properties, and then it's go with Open With, and it lists the default application, and then there are the recommended applications. And the default is Image Magic, which is a photo viewer type thing. I select Document Viewer as one of the recommended applications, and also I have Foxit on there. I select either one of those. It gets highlighted. Set as default comes out of gray and into the where I can click on it. I click on it, and the highlight jumps back up to Image Magic and doesn't change it.
Okay. So you select one of those, and then do you hit reset or close?
Well, once I hit set as default, it jumps up. If I hit reset, it jumps back up to Image Magic also.
Right. You should just be able to select Image Viewer or whatever, and then hit close and be done.
There is no close on it. It's I guess if I exit out, but the thing is set as default. And I
right, click right, right.
So, but if I just close it out, I'll try that and see what.
Well, the other thing you can do. How familiar are you with the command line?
Not at all. Not much.
Yeah,
at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is a way to fix it at the command line, but
I went on Ask Ubuntu and found similar stuff like that, and some people had, you know, suggestions for it, and I tried doing that stuff, and I didn't, it wasn't successful. I mean, I didn't understand what I was doing, but I just put in what they suggested.
Right. What version are you using?
16.04.
Yeah, man, that should work.
Yeah.
I don't honestly know. I'd have to.
Yeah. See, it worked all the time before, you know, and it was just recently when I tried to click on it, and so something changed from the original setting, unless an update changed, something changed, I don't know, or I did something that I'm not aware of.
Right. So let me just go back. You right click, select properties, then pick the thing you want and hit set as default, and it doesn't stay that way.
Yeah, I highlight Document Viewers, and then so the whole thing is highlighted. When I hit set as default, the highlighter jumps back up to Image Magic.
Right, whatever type of file it is, doesn't matter.
Yeah, PDF.
Right. Have you tried a different PDF?
Yes, I've tried a bunch of different ones. And
okay, because one of the issues is if that file is locked, it might not let you make that change.
Okay. Well, see, when I click on it, I can say Open With and select Document Viewer, and it opens up in Document Viewer or Foxit.
Right.
But it just doesn't let me change the default.
I don't know the answer to that. I'll look into it, but I don't. I mean, that should work. I've never known it not to work, so I don't know what. is different. You don't have to be the administrator because it should work for any individual user, only for that user.
Yeah.
But you're only one user anyway, so you don't care.
Right.
Unless Document Viewer was grayed out and doesn't and isn't on the system. But you said if you that you can open Document Viewer.
Right.
And open the file through it, and that works.
Right.
And then open with, where I don't know. It should just work. I'm sorry. I will have to look that up.
Now, where would you post it on your website?
On the website. I will put it on the Soundbites website.
Okay. And another thing I have is that I've had all along is anytime I try to open a photograph, you know, say if I have a list of 20 of them in a file, and I click on the first one, and they're in order from date, sequence, or up or down. If I click on that, and then on the photo opens, and then I hit one of the arrows to go to the next one, it doesn't go to the next one in the file. It just seems to jump randomly out of that whole group.
Well, what you're using something like the I forget what the name of it is.
Well, it's called Image Viewer.
Image Viewer.
Yeah.
It's set to open them alphabetically.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have it in front of me, and I'm sorry. I don't use it often, so I don't have it in front of me, and I don't have it in my head.
Okay.
How you change that from alphabetical
to date.
Yeah. I don't have that in my head. I'm sorry. But that's the issue at hand. If you look down the left-hand side, where you can see them all, you'll see that they are alphabetical.
Okay, maybe I can Google that question. I've had a lot of success in Googling things when I'm learning this system. So, okay, yeah, I'll look for that. On your Soundbites website, you put an answer if you find out something.
Yep, I will.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, bye.
Bye. It's we have, and I admit this. I am using a Chromebook here. So I can't look stuff up. And if I haven't used the product extensively, I just don't have an answer in my head for it. I just don't. Although I use Google every day, I use Ubuntu every day, and I use the Document Viewer every day, I just haven't changed anything in it. So I don't know. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Carl, all the way from Pottstown, PA.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay. I have a question about recording telephone conversations on a cell phone.
Yeah.
I would like to download some kind of application to a cell phone, and I have an Android cell phone, and I'd like to automatically record any conversations I have because I'm doing a little bit of business over the cell phone, and people give me technical details, and I try to write down everything as they're talking. It's not always very easy. Sometimes I'd like them to say it again. I have to say, could you repeat that? So is there any way I could record my cell phone conversations?
Yes. There are several applications. The one that I use, which may not be perfect for you, but I use it, is called Bold Beast Recorder. And I'm trying to open it now, and there we are. It has a button. There's a bunch of settings, of course, that you can change. And one of them is you can set it to manually record calls, automatically record calls. You want to test it because there are multiple record modes. And depending on which phone you have and which version of Android, yada, 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 one of those modes will work much better than the other. So get a patient friend and make a half a dozen calls as you go through the modes. But then there's a thing about recording issues and then the recording formats and all kinds of stuff like that. So you can also set it to abandon short records. So if you have it automatically record and you pick up the phone and it's a telemarketer and you hang up, it won't save that X number of seconds, right? If the call is shorter than X, you can. And so there's all kinds of choices there. One thing you want to be very much aware of is that this will take lots and lots of space on your machine. So if you've got a phone that allows you to add a little SD card, get a big one.
Okay.
But there are others. That just happens to be the one I use. It's called Bold Beast Recorder. And I've been using it for ever, I think.
Least, and I assume I could get that through the Google Play Store.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had it through at least two phones, maybe three. So, and I don't change my phones that often. So, it's been around for a while. It's always worked for me. Again, you know, there are bunches of them. So, a look through may find one that better suits your needs, but that one's worked for me very nicely since the beginning.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep-er.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have fun. Yeah, there are lots of interesting programs like that. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It's a small utility that does exactly what you want it to do.
There you go.
When I was working full-time, before I blissfully retired, when I was working full-time, I used it constantly. And now I have it set to manual, so if somebody calls me and I want to record it, there's a little button on screen. I hit the button.
Sweet.
And it does the recording. Mm-hmm. That's one of my two favorite apps. and if you set it to automatically record all calls, of course, it's a set it and forget it. The other app that I really love is called Mute by Location. And once you set it up, I've got it set for pretty much every movie theater in town. You set it up and you say, from this location for this radius, you know, 100 feet, 600 feet, 800 feet, whatever it is, for this location, whenever I am at this location, mute my phone.
Cool.
So I do it, for example, here. My phone is on mute.
Mm-hmm.
The minute I walk in the door, I don't have to remember. I can't forget.
Yeah.
You know, so
well, that's
that
one thing
out.
That Google Pixel XL let me do.
Yep.
Is set it up so every Saturday from 12 to 1, my phone is automatically muted. I don't have to worry about muting it, turning it off and on. Automatically, every Saturday from 12 to 2, it does not ring.
Yep.
So it's handy. Two other things though we should mention, sort of sidebar here, is one, you won't be able to see us live in the studio right now because Steve Ray isn't here. Should have mentioned that a little while ago, but he's off. Who knows the law catching up with him. But, you can't see us live. You can hear us on our stream. And the other thing, warning you guys ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
Next Sunday is Mother's Day. So don't panic until next Saturday when we're reminding you again. Quick, go out and get that card because this way we're giving you a little heads up. You can go out and get the card before they're all picked over and get in line for if you're going to order flowers or make reservations and all that. You can't do reservations the last minute.
Right. Order flowers. I'm telling you right now.
Do it.
Order
early.
Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. It takes 5 minutes of your time. You can order a lovely bouquet, even with a vase, or if you prefer a vase, for like $50. Don't be cheap. And trust me, it's a good thing. Do it. Do it now and tell them to deliver it, Friday, for example, or Saturday at your home.
And then that way you make out because now it's 2 days she's feeling special, Saturday and Sunday.
That's right. Deliver the
flowers. Here all the way around.
I always delivered my wife's flowers to work so she can gloat.
Everybody sits there. Yeah. Who are those going to,
Had husbands call me and say, what the hell are you doing?
My late wife, I used to do that.
Please, it takes 10 minutes of your time. And how can you say no to that? It's easy, it's fast, it's convenient,
and
good
for
everybody.
And you're the hero.
Yep. Nothing wrong with that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. What's up, Gary?
Well, I think I committed the cardinal sin that Dave Enright said not to do is I clicked on some things and got myself in some trouble. And I'm not sure if you can help me or not. I've been a frequent caller over the years, and you're batting 1,000 in terms of solving everything I've called about.
But no pressure.
We'll try.
No, there is no pressure. But we'll see what we can do. What happened is on Thursday, my wife and I have a cleaner who comes in who's a great help and very overzealous. And what she did is when she was mopping under the desk where that we have the computer on. She hit the off switch on a power strip that I believe probably just shut off the modem that connects us to the internet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I turned the computer on and I couldn't get the internet, and we turned that switch on and we still couldn't get the internet. And I tried a number of things that I've created some problems, but I did call our ISP. It was Frontier, and they tried a few things, but they concluded just from the lights that are on our router that it is an internet problem, that it's not my computer problem. And they're going to send a tech out on Monday. But if I tell you what I've called them before with some small problems, and as you probably know, they're not always the brightest bulbs in the chandelier.
Yeah.
They might be bright, but they're always rushing you off because
they're trying to get to the next call.
Yeah, they have to.
Before you get into all this, let me just ask you a couple basic questions.
Go ahead.
One, did you turn both the computers off and turn the router off, all three items?
Not all at once.
Well, all right, here's...
Go ahead.
Bear with me just for a moment. All right, what I would do is suggest turning everything off.
Okay.
You then
wait a couple of minutes.
Yep. You wait a few minutes. Then you turn on your router modem.
Okay.
Wait a couple of minutes. Let all the lights come on to that.
All right.
And then slowly turn on your one computer at a time and let the router now give it a brand new IP address.
Okay.
Well, because, if you got the machines on, you turn the modem off and turn it back on, Windows doesn't always refresh itself. It still remembers the old IP address that it had and the time frame for that. So what I always recommend to folks is turn everything off. Everything off, wait a few minutes, go to the fridge, get something to drink, come back, turn the modem on.
All right.
Then sit and relax for a few moments while the modem fully gets all the lights on that you know or should be lit. They're there. Wait a couple of moments, and then start turning one computer on at a time.
Yeah, it is just one computer connected. I might have misled
you. Well, that's okay. It doesn't matter whether it's one or 50.
Do, which is somewhat similar to what you're saying, is to unplug the modem, wait 10 seconds, and plug it back in.
Right. Now, let me ask you a question. Can you see the lights on the modem?
Yes.
Are any of them red?
One of them is red, and that's the one. It's the one that's marked Internet.
Yeah. That's your problem, and Time Warner is correct.
Yeah.
Not a sentence I say often.
But they are correct.
They are correct.
Yeah,
so
case,
what's happened is you could talk, for example, to other machines on your local network in your house.
Intranet.
But you could not get out to the internet because there is something wrong with the connection between your cable. Now, what I might suggest you try is just in case your... the person who does your cleaning had a problem. Make sure all the connections are tight in the back of that modem.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
We got to take a break. Hold on. Stay on the line. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, 42 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, a member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 46 minutes after the hour, we still have Gary from Rochester on the line. You there, Gary?
Yes, I am. And I have shut off the router and the computer. And do you want me to try to put them back on, or is it definitely just something that a tech from...
Well, you should certainly turn them back on and see if that fits. But before you do that, if that works. But before you do that, check in the back...
Uh-huh.
And make sure that everything is plugged in tight.
Okay.
In terms of the cable, which is coming from Time Warner, that's probably a coax, which means it screws in. So you should definitely make sure that's in nice and tight and all your other connections are in nice and tight. And then turn the modem on and see if all the lights come on. And then do that for each of your computers in the same way that Dave said. Now, if that one light that says internet stays red, then it is definitely not something you can fix. That's going to have to wait for Time Warner.
Okay. Well, I'll try all that.
Perfect.
And if it comes on green for the internet light, which means that I am connected, I might call back.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
All right.
Yeah, in general, there's what we call a single point of failure at the modem, and if the modem fails, everything else isn't going to work in terms of the internet either. It is the single point which could fail and make that happen. You know, if you're a company, of course, you put in multiple modems, yada, 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 but for an individual, of course, that's kind of silly. But it also means that if, in fact, something happens, you've got to wait for Time Warner to come in and fix the whole idea. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from South Buffalo, New York. What's up, Mike?
Hi there. Hi, guys. I got a question. I got a computer from work. You know, it's an auction type thing.
Yeah.
You're buying blinds. You know, they don't guarantee anything. So I installed Windows 7 on it to see whether it would work or not. But it's got some real esoteric cards in it. So I took them out, and I'm going to reinstall 7 again. And here's my question. You know what gets to the part where it says, would you like to make sure that this is a genuine, you know, a Windows 7 and all that?
Yeah.
You answer yes to that. Is it confusing, or do you answer yes to it once? Now, do you do it again?
Well, if it asks you, then it does not recognize your machine as a legitimate Windows installation.
Okay. Well, I haven't done it yet, so
If it asks you a second time, then either it just had trouble connecting, which it often does, or in fact that is not a genuine, the serial number is not right, or whatever it might happen to be. The problem, of course, you're going to run into is a lack of support. Right, because it's Windows 7.
I can live with that.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is it may not validate anymore.
Oh, okay.
Because Windows 7 went off mainstream support in 2015. So yeah. If your company is paying for extended support and it recognizes that as being part of your company, that version of Windows, then you will continue to get support. But mainstream support ended, and that means all you get are what's the word they use? It's security updates, but there's a specific word they use. You don't get every security update. You only get the house is burning down ones, and I can't think of what they call it. But the point is, you may not get support for driver updates and things like that from them. And I know it's stupid, because all that takes is a little bit of disk space and leaving up the programming that they had up for 10 years. But doing so means that you aren't going to move to Windows 10, and they don't like that idea.
Okay. Next question.
Yeah.
Okay. And I hope Rob's listening to this one, because, you know, this is primarily a music station. Okay. I run fiber, Toslink, between my computer to my Marantz receiver, okay? And I use a Creative Lab SoundBlaster card for that, okay? And I was just wondering if there was something better.
Well, that's pretty good. How much money do you want to spend?
Well, that's what I mean. If there is one, I'm one of those stereo guys. You know, it's like no object, you know? I was like,
no, you're not a stereo guy if you're not using tubes.
No. I know what you mean, but I'm not that far off. You name this set of speakers, and I have it, but right. I'm not running tubes. That's only rich doctors run that.
Exactly. What we're talking about for the rest of you is there are audio snobs, and then there are audio snobs.
Mm-hmm.
And the real audio snobs tell you that a receiver must use tubes, not transistors. And only vinyl that you've running maybe a second time, and you certainly never want to record anything to a computer because you're going to lose all the harmonics and overtones.
Yeah.
And so I was just joking with Mike that he's not a real audio guy if he's not using tubes. But
no, we had a guy, but he originally worked for Moog.
Yeah.
Okay, next question.
Yeah.
I use a Cronus. Is there anything better? You know, it works for me. It has some little problems. Sometimes I have to do a backup, you know, to the extra backup, you know, twice. It works pretty good. Is there something better out there now?
You're talking about a Cronus backup software?
Yeah, disaster recovery software, I'd call it, but.
Yeah, Cronus, better. It works very well, and it does good backup and good restore, particularly for using TrueImage. There's a brand new version for 2017, and Cronus is excellent if you're already using it and it's working for you. But here's any backup software is only as good as your ability to restore. So have you tried to restore anything?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, that's the way I do it, is I have a spare drive that I pop in. And, you know, I'm an old digital equipment corporation guy. You know, a backup's untested unless you put it on another drive and put that in, you know, as the primary. You know?
Oh, you're a man after my own heart. That's absolutely true.
We were taught, when I was in school, we were taught the information, somebody's retirement account is worth more than the whole computer.
Yep.
That's the, you know, and that's not taught today, but that's the way we were taught, you know.
So, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And you're absolutely right, Mike. That's, and so as long as you've been doing not just consistent backups, but regular tests to restore a file or the whole thing, as long as you're doing that, then a Cronus will continue to work fine for you. And it's not, and for everybody else, I'm not saying that because a Cronus can't be trusted. It's simply because no backup software can be trusted until you've done the latest restore. So Mike is exactly right. That's the way to do it. Okay.
Next question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hope you don't have a limit.
Well, okay. I think we got somebody else waiting on the line, but go ahead. One more.
Okay. I will soon be like you, retired, okay? And
congrats.
I want to learn Photoshop, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I'm not even sure I'm in the drawer. I'm like out in New York rusting, okay?
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what your suggestions are for doing Photoshop, because I'd like to play around with cameras and travel when I retire.
Yeah. There are a couple of places. I don't know if Udemy has one. There's photography courses. Look at that. There's an online academy called Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y.
Okay.
Like a combination of university and academy, Udemy.
Yeah.
And they have a bunch of courses, and I'm looking for Photoshop right now, yep, there it is. The platform's biggest and most popular Photoshop course. $10. Ultimate Photoshop Training, $10. Oh, things are on sale right now. Normally that's $20 and the other one is $200. So they're on sale right now. So you can take online courses and learn pretty much everything you want to learn right online.
Okay.
Udemy is one. Khan Academy is another. There's a dozen of those places as well.
Sounds good. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, all right.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we have
there are lots of places on the internet where you could learn interesting things. There are also, of course,
anything and everything's out there.
Right. You can also just watch a bunch of YouTube videos. Lots of people are providing, you know, tidbits of information for free, not necessarily a full course. But, you know, you want to learn a little bit about how to use a particular tool, like the stamp or, you know, whatever. There'll be a tutorial up on YouTube.
Well, YouTube. I wound up going to that when I was looking for help in studying for my CDL license.
Right.
And I found these two Russian guys.
Yeah.
And to this day, my wife still laughs because, you know, they were so comical because they'd be playing them, you know, and they'd be going through. I mean, there had to be over 200 questions.
Yeah.
And these two guys, the one you knew his stuff, and this other guy was sort of just chiming in, and the guy's going, yeah. But he's sitting there going, you got to do it safely. Everything is done safely. It was so unique, but it helped me remember a lot of stuff because of their humor.
There are many, 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 many people who are education theorists who say that when you teach something with humor, people remember it better.
Oh, these two guys, like I say, I listened to them so many days in a row listening to that, and it was so humorous. It stuck.
Yep.
It's exactly stuck.
How it works. But there's lots of that stuff out there.
Udemy, anything and
Udemy
everything.
Will charge you for certain courses. Khan Academy is 100% free. There's 50 of them out there if you just look up Online Academy. And, of course, it certainly never hurts to take the free ones. In terms of the ones that you pay for, well, that's up to you. I would take a look at the ratings. You know, do your research just the way you would if you were going to go to a real school for a real course. You want to pay attention to what's being said about them and what their rating is and all that other stuff. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But because you're a slow learner, we're going to give you the chance to do it again. We are going to, like I said, take a slightly longer break and then be back on the other side for a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, with me, Nick Francesco, on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. It is Soundbites, and we will see you in just a few minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Matt from Buffalo, New York on the line. What's up, Matt?
Well, I just want to spread the word. You know, Time Warner is pretty high and stuff. And this is to all the old people. And I just want to spread the word. They have Spectrum Internet Assist. You could get it for $15. I mean, you have to qualify for it. I mean, like, if your kid gets free lunches or whatever, or if you're on SSI, like an old-timer, I mean, this is available, and it's only $15 a month. So the website is SpectrumInternetAssist.com, you know.
All right, perfect.
I just want to spread the word.
Thanks. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, they're doing some very nice things out there. I realize that there are lots of people who cannot afford things like high-speed internet, et cetera, et cetera. and yet internet is so essential to everybody nowadays. It's really fast becoming not a luxury, but a necessity. There are lots of places you can't even apply for jobs.
Yeah.
Except online.
Everything's online.
Right, yep. Right. All right, back on to our next caller, Vic from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Vic. What's up?
Couple things. First, their music sounded like I was in a speakeasy with Al Capone and Frank Nitti.
That's exactly right.
That was good. Anyway,
23 Skidoo, baby.
On my computer, I run ESET. NOD32 is my antivirus.
Yep.
And I have the paid version of Super Anti-Spyware, the free version of Malwarebytes, the free version of Glary Utilities, and Trend Micro's House Call. Is that too much stuff?
Well, no. The last two, maybe. But here's the deal. If you're paying for ESET, it's probably working in the background all the time. You should set it up to do that. If you're paying for Super Anti-Spyware, that's probably running in the background all the time, and that's good. Because really, as we keep saying, antivirus and anti-spyware really are sort of two different things. Malwarebytes, you need to run that, of course, by hand regularly because you got the free version. It's not going to run in the background. As for the other two, they may be redundant to something you're already using. Generally yeah. speaking, at this point, you only need one antivirus, one anti-spyware, one anti-everything else, which is, in your case, ESET, Super Anti-Spyware, and Malwarebytes.
Right.
The other stuff is redundant. Does it take up some processing power? Sure. But, you know, unless you're running on 20-year-old hardware, you're not going to notice it.
Yeah, my computer's 7 years old. I do notice it. But the Super Anti-Spyware runs all the time. Now, the Malwarebytes doesn't. Is it to my advantage to get the pay version to have that run, or will there be, like, conflicting things?
Well, you really, like I said, you need one antivirus, one anti-spyware, and one anti-everything else. So if you get rid of the other stuff and you're using pay ESET, pay Super Anti-Spyware, and you pay for Malwarebytes,
you're
and,
set.
And then run that, you're set.
Okay, now that Glary Utility is a little bit different. It gets rid of temporary files and a lot of other stuff. So is that considered anti-malware?
No, that's an entirely different thing. But that's not something you need to be running constantly. You
right.
can run that once a day.
Right, that's what I do. I run that at the
right
end
then.
Of my, before I shut the computer off at night.
Right.
That's yeah, that's okay.
Thing. Yep.
Okay, what about that Trend Micro house call? What do you think about that?
Well,
yeah,
you don't need
fan.
It on top of everything else.
Yeah, it's like you're doing too much, and too much can slow your machine down.
Okay, I'll get rid of that then. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Yep. Yeah, we tell people that regularly. You do need to continue running antivirus. You do need to run anti-spyware, and you do need to run anti-other things, anti-malware. Super anti-spyware and Malwarebytes will cover those two, and then whatever antivirus you want to run. But you only need to run one of those. Now, the problem is Super anti-spyware and Malwarebytes don't run for free. Don't run constantly in the free version, excuse me. So if you want those to be running constantly in the background, then you do need to pay for it. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. What's up, Walter?
Hi there, guys. I think I may have an answer that could be helpful for the guy who is running Ubuntu and he has the PDF problem.
Oh, that's Larry from Spencerport, yeah.
Okay, well, I think what he was doing, if he's going into the properties, I believe he's setting it as a default for just that one document. If he goes into properties, what he ought to do is, I'm going to suggest, you know, I'm looking at, because I'm running Ubuntu 2, you know, 16.04, I right-click on it, I go to Open With, then at the bottom it says Open With Other Applications.
Mm-hmm.
You click on that, then at the top you will see Open that document and other files of type PDF documents with. You then choose, under the recommended applications, choose Document Viewer. Then at the bottom, it says, there's a little box that says use as a default for this kind of file. You click on that, the X, then you say open, and it will open, and it will do that for, you should do that for all of his other PDF files.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, I got a question for you, though, too.
Yep.
Because that, I'm surprised you haven't talked about the Google Documents spoof that happened.
Well, it's actually
one of our stories.
My very next story, but we've not gotten to it because we've had calls.
Yeah, because I was very interested because, to me, the Google Docs, isn't that like, I know it's not built into the Chrome operating system, but that's where everything goes, right?
Right, that's what everybody uses. What Walter is talking about is Google, there was an email scam going around. It's not a virus or any of that stuff. It's an email scam. And what happens is spammers will send out a malicious email, which appears to come from somebody you know, and it wants you to click on what appears to be a shared Google document. And if you've never gotten a shared Google document from someone, then this looks legit. But if you've ever seen an email with a shared Google document in it, it looks very different from this thing. But I guess they got as close as they thought they could get. But anytime you get any email, and then, you know, like with any phishing attempt, it tries to get you to open it because it's going to be so wonderful and it came from somebody you know and yada, yada, yada. And in terms of that, Google has disabled the accounts that were responsible for it. It's done an update to block it, and they're working on ways to prevent it from something like it from happening in the future. But if you get an email like that, don't click on it, even if it's from your mother. Also turn on multi-factor authentication, because if somebody did get your credentials, then they still couldn't get in. Because when they tried to log in from a new location, it would say, okay, we've just sent a verifying number to your phone, so type it in. And then obviously it's coming to your phone, not theirs, and all you do is not type it in, and they can't get in. If you do think that you've clicked on that phishing attack, shut it down. And you can do that by going to myaccount.google.com/permissions, then you can see that what's allowed to access your system, revoke the access to Google Docs. You'll still be able to access contacts and Drive itself, and then you wait a few days and you can turn Google Docs back on again. Also, you know, if you got caught by this, change your passwords.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't get caught or anything like that. I was just curious because it seems to me that this would only affect Windows or Linux machines or somebody else where you'd have to have your email addresses in some document or some other place. You know, because I use I have my email addresses all set up in KeePass X, so I go through there.
Right.
So it would have had no effect then on a Chromebook. Or,
right.
Okay, so because I don't have an old Chromebook, where does one keep those email addresses? Is it
on Google? Google has a section actually of Gmail called Contacts.
Okay, all right, so it didn't overlap anyway to there then.
Right.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah. So it will. No, wait, did he say it? No, I may have misled you there, Walter. It does, in fact, ask you to give it access to your contacts list and to your Google Drive system. And once you do that, you're caught. But like I said, you can go into myaccount.google.com/permissions, find that program, which should be the only odd program you have in there, and revoke its access to Google Docs. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Hi, Nick. I'm a member. Listen to you guys all the time.
Absolutely.
Thanks for what you do.
Thank you. So
I have Windows 10, Word 2016. I'm having a couple of problems. First, whenever I open Word, I just get the, you know, the eternal blue waiting circle. I close out of it. It will tell me I need to restart it, and then it starts up fine.
Huh. Okay, let me ask a couple of quick questions. You're running Windows 10. How much yep. RAM do you have?
I don't. I don't know. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine.
It is a new computer. It's one of the HP all-in-one computers.
You've probably got plenty.
Yeah, at least eight.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not that you're running out of RAM. So it is very possible that you have a virus.
Okay.
Because what will happen is there are lots and lots of Word viruses. They end up as macros in your system that run at startup. Most of them have been shut down.
Yeah.
But you may have one that's trying to get out to a server that no longer exists, and therefore you're having that problem.
Okay.
So what I might suggest you do is go to securitytango.com.
Okay, I see that.
Dance the Security Tango. And just run everything. Because,
okay.
you know, there are 100,000 different Word viruses and macro viruses, and I can't tell you which one it is.
Yeah.
All right.
So do that, and you should also you can also turn off your macros in Office files.
So office files.
Right. So what you want to do is you should see, well, it's 2016, so you should
see a
little yellow message bar that says enable content or disable content. Security warning. Oh, that's if they've already been disabled. So if you want to, you can go from the file tab, go to security warning, and then enable content and say, you know, disable the content.
Okay. Well, I'm in the file. I don't see the second part, but I can work on that. So I open up Word, I go to file, and then where do I go?
You should have... Again, I don't have it in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We're talking about Word. Oh, we're talking about Word. That's why. what you want to do is in Word. There's that Microsoft Office button.
Okay.
Click Word Options, and there's a Trust Center. Now you have 2016, so the Trust Center may be somewhere else. But look for Trust Center. Under Trust Center Settings, you'll see Macro Settings.
Okay, I'll look for that.
And then there's choices. Disable all macros without notification. Disable all macros with notification.
Okay.
Disable all macros, blah, 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 blah. So that you pick one of those, maybe disable all of them, and you should be on your way.
Okay,
stay on the line. We have to take a quick break.
Yep,
we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, Gary from Greece, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, I'm not sure who we have on the line at the moment. Who's this?
It's Henry from Rochester.
Hi, Henry. Before we get to your question, let me just apologize to Gary. We seem to have lost Gary, then we lost Henry. As we've stated many, many times during pledge drives, this phone system was never designed for a call-in show. So every once in a while, we have an issue. So, you know, if anybody'd like to donate enough money for us to get our own phone system, that'd
be sweet.
Until then, we have Henry from Rochester on the line. What's up, Henry?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling regarding the call you had earlier from Gary with the problem with his Frontier internet connection. I about a year or so ago, I had a very same thing happen to me. I turned my computer on and modem on one day, couldn't connect to the internet, turned them off, went through the whole process of checking all the connections, all the cables, connections to the Frontier and all that, tried it several times, nothing happened. Still the same problem, no connection to the internet. Ended up calling Frontier, and they walked me through going on to the logging onto the modem and checking all the settings. And what turned out was that somehow the modem had lost, apparently, I forget whether it was one or two fields that allowed it to log on to the Frontier system.
There you go.
So I don't know whether when Gary called Frontier, whether they had him go through there and check that.
No, he's
a Time Warner guy.
Time Warner.
No, I thought he said Frontier.
No, he said Time Warner.
Spectrum now.
Spectrum.
Spectrum's coming out to his place on Monday.
I thought I very well heard him say Frontier.
No, you're fine. That's perfectly understandable.
Maybe the same thing true with Spectrum. Call whoever it was, call him back, and if they didn't want have him walk through the modem, walk through the, because they did that. They told me what the internet.
He already said that he did call Spectrum. They walked him through it, and they told him yes, it's RN, and that's why they were sending the guy out.
Okay, well, I'm just saying I had exactly the same thing happen.
No, that's okay.
A year ago. Okay.
Yep. Thanks, Henry.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's the problem is things are getting very complex now. Is the problem in the connection from the computer to the router? Is the problem in the router? Is the problem from the router to the head end? Is the problem from the head end back? Who knows? It gets so complex nowadays, and generally speaking, you need somebody to deal with that for you because you don't have a lot of that stuff. All right, our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. And by the way, I just re-upped
my
membership.
Thank you, Larry.
My question, I just purchased for my grandson a robotics kit from Thames and Cosmos, and they use something called CB1 blocky code. So I downloaded the code on my iPad. Seems to be okay, but when I tried to download it on my grandson's laptop, Norton blocks it completely, removes it, and says it finds a heuristic virus or something in it. And then it also says that the program's only been out a week or something like that. I tried it two or three times. At any rate, Norton will not let me install it on the laptop. I guess my question should I just go ahead and avoid that and just do this thing completely on the iPad? The iPad seems to have no problems with it.
Right. There is it's an app for both Android and iOS. So
right.
It absolutely works for that. If Blockly is being, blocked.
Yep.
You can tell Norton that it's okay.
Okay, I guess that's what I was really getting at. If I tried doing that, would I be making a really big mistake?
No, if you're downloading it from Blockly's own website.
Uh-huh.
Right.
It comes from the company that produces it.
Right. As long as you're sure of all of that.
As near as I can be.
Right.
When I read the manual, it tells me to go to exactly this site. I do. It brings up and it says the app for the laptop was created on Win 10. So I thought, well, what could be the problem there? And as I said, I've tried it a couple of times, but Norton looks at it and says, nope, I'm removing this.
Right. And what you'll have to do is tell Norton that it's okay.
Okay. And my last question, and I'll listen offline, what is a heuristic virus.
Heuristic? Well, all right. You got about 10 or 12 hours?
Oh, never mind.
No, I can give you the short answer.
Short answer.
A heuristic virus. Well, you know what a virus is?
Yes, kind of, pretty much.
Right. A heuristic virus is essentially, and this is, if those of you who are computer scientists, don't call me up and complain. It's essentially a self-learning virus. It can change itself based on what it finds.
That doesn't sound good.
No, it isn't. And that, and those are heuristic viruses are harder to get rid of because they mutate, I guess is the right word, to defend themselves. Now, the good news is heuristic viruses are also kind of hard to write. So there aren't as many of them as there might be, but or as there probably will be in the future. But basically, the word heuristic essentially means learning for yourself, I guess.
Okay.
So earlier we were talking about going to places like Udemy and Khan Academy to learn how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
That would make you heuristic. You're engaging in heuristic learning.
Okay.
Because you're learning by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And with a computer, heuristic learning essentially means you, once you've written the virus, you don't have to teach the virus how to avoid the next thing. The virus will learn by itself.
Oh. Okay, that doesn't sound good, but...
No, it is not. No. It is not good, but we don't see a lot of heuristic viruses at this point. And in fact, in this particular case, obviously... what did you say you had? Norton?
Yeah, Norton.
Yeah, Norton is misidentifying Blockly as a heuristic virus.
Okay,
it's kind of right.
Named, and I don't have it in front of me now, but it actually named the file that it saw that it didn't like.
Right.
And based on that, it said, nope, I'm going to just scrub this thing and you're done.
Right, and it's partially right. I mean, Blockly is a program that writes code. Right?
Yes.
So that is heuristic in a sense. At least it's the beginning of what would make something heuristic.
I see.
Right? It writes code itself. So if you could teach it to learn to write its own code, right, it would be heuristic. So, yeah, it's not completely incorrect. It's just a false alarm.
Okay. Well, I think that's what I was after. I didn't want to mess around and get something on the machine that would be hard or next to impossible to get off.
Right.
But on the other hand, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, maybe this is a false alarm and I can go ahead and do it.
Right,
and
right,
I think
right.
You've given me more information than I know what to do with. But thank you so much.
Yep. Okay. Have
you
fun.
Too.
Yeah. Blockly is generally downloaded from developers.google.com. /Blockly, basically. It's a pretty cool little project, actually. It's, you pick your language and essentially it's little building blocks, little, puzzle pieces. It looks like puzzle pieces. And it'll, you know, have whiles and loops and prints and things like that, and you just link them together, and bang, you have a program. It's very cool, and it's designed specifically for kids. Very nice, very nice product. It's essentially, what are they called? Visual programming. It's visual programming, and it's a very nice little product. And I'm, you know, you could write, if you know JavaScript or whatever the language is, right? PHP, Python, Lua, Dart, I don't care, whatever it happens to be. You can write it certainly faster than you can put the little building blocks together, but it's designed for mostly kids who don't know how to do that stuff. It's a very cool little thing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is a friend of the show,
yeah.
Al. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys.
How's
not
it going?
Have a rainy day to you.
And the rest of the day to yourself.
Hey, just a quick... addition or comment, you had a gentleman earlier who was starting to get his feet wet in Photoshop and was trying to figure out where to go next.
Yep.
There is a user group in town called Rochester Photo Editing.
Well, there you go.
And if he goes to Google and searches for Rochester Photo Editing, it'll lead him to a meetup site and tell him a little bit about us.
Perfect.
Okay. Meets this coming Wednesday at 7 o'clock over at the Pittsburgh Town Hall.
There you go. Now, this Mike. This is Mike. He's in Buffalo, so there may be a group in Buffalo. But if not, he can certainly come to Rochester. We're not that far away. So he just looks for a photo editing. Maybe there's a Buffalo photo editing group, or maybe somebody in the Rochester group knows about a group in Buffalo.
Yeah, very possible. It's just the main reason I call is because many people can learn on computer courses, et cetera, but sometimes there's a benefit to talking to a real-life person.
Yep, absolutely. No question. No question.
Okay.
Good point. Thanks.
Sure. Take care, you guys.
You too. Keep smiling.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, there are lots of local groups. There's local groups for pretty much everything. You can find them through Google. There's a place
called... you can find the support out there you need.
Meetup. At meetup.com. And you can go to Meetup and say, oh, I want to know who's doing what in Rochester, New York, or Buffalo, New York. And you'll go to the Meetups. So I think it would be meetup.com/cities/US/New York/Buffalo, in your case. Actually, why don't I type that in and see what I get? There's an idea. Wow.
Technology experience.
There it is, Meetups in Buffalo. There are apparently some people in Buffalo doing some meeting. And you can find all kinds of things. And if I were to type in, if I could learn to type, I could type in Photoshop. And look at this.
Group out there?
There's Buffalo Photoshop for Beginners Meetup.
There you go.
There's the Buffalo Niagara Photographers Guild. There's the Buffalo Lab, a makerspace. Oh, makerspaces are so cool. So anybody who wants to look for a place where they can meet other people who are interested in the same things they're interested in, and it's not just geek stuff. There's a meetup group that plays euchre, there's no better way to spend an idle hour.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of stuff out there for folks, but you just got to go out and look for it.
Yep.
Nowadays, to sit there and, I don't know, if you've got a computer, 10 wide, you can do a search on stuff and find it. Yep. I mean, it's, a wide variety of interests.
Right.
Whether it's stamp collecting or whatever.
Here's Azure Users Group, Learn Tai Chi. Marketing meetup, the Rochester Euchre Group. There it is, 1,100 euchre players. There's a Saturday afternoon. I will admit that I spent most of my sophomore year in college playing euchre.
Oh, I remember my late wife and I used to get together with folks and play. And she used to call it euch tree. She didn't think it was, I said, euchre. No, euch tree.
Oh, euchre. I see.
It's right. No, euchre.
Right, right. It's euchre.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of everything. The Rochester Digital Photography Meetup Group, et cetera, but, and you can certainly come to that. We're not going to toss you out just because you're from Buffalo. We're more than welcoming for that sort of thing. But if you would prefer to find something a little closer to home... you can do that. So I recommend meetup.com as a place to look for stuff. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve... No, no, Steve Ray. No, no, no. Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still.
One of the things that we've all been looking forward to, those of us with Chromebooks, is running Android apps on our Chromebooks.
Yes.
It's not available yet.
I know. Matter of fact, it's funny you mentioned it. I just checked this week again just to see what's the latest.
It was originally supposed to be March.
Yep.
Then it was supposed to be April. Now we're in May. Samsung also has a Chromebook Pro, I want to say. There's the Plus and the Pro, and one of them is already out and the other one isn't. And whichever one isn't out is the one that's supposed to run Android apps. The problem seems to be it's in the beta channel, but it's not in the stable channel, and it was supposed to be. The problem seems to be that, frankly, the Android apps look kind of ugly. If you blow them up the full screen, this is exactly the problem that Apple had originally when they first brought out the iPad.
Okay.
You ran iPhone apps on an iPad, and it just doubled the size. So everything was blocky and pixely, and it just was ugly.
Didn't look good.
Right. And the same thing is now happening with Chromebook. Exactly the same thing. Apparently nobody learns. So what they need to do, of course, is people need to rewrite their apps for looking good on Chromebooks.
Yeah.
The other thing that Google could do, I suppose, is when it realizes it's running an Android app, it could limit the size of the window that it runs in.
Just do a smaller window, not make it full screen.
It's going to have to be one or the other, and I don't know which they're going to end up with. But the reality is that we are now all still waiting. I've been waiting to buy a new Chromebook, one that will turn into a tablet and run Android apps.
Right.
But unfortunately, I'm waiting and waiting and continuing to be waiting. Dave, you have a Chromebook that's supposed to run, though.
Yeah, it's, as a matter of fact, like I said, I've been checking, and I checked again this week, and again, they say, it's not quite ready yet.
Yep.
But I was doing some research like you, and I think what's going to happen, though, is to get everybody, to rewrite their code to go either or. I think Chrome is going to have to sit there and say, all right, you're totally right. Limit the size of the screen.
Yep.
That's the only way. Granted, you won't be able to have it on the full 15-inch screen, but, if you have it on a decent-sized window, it's still bigger than what was on your phone.
Right.
And even if they do, say, like a 5x7 or a 4x6 window, something decent that you can see and run it, you're still good. You're still farther ahead than you were with just the limit, what you can do on the Chromebook.
Right, and one of the problems is the different sizes of screens require a different type of programming. You can either just let the machine arrange everything to its heart's content, or if you're trying to create something that looks magnificent, then you have to tell it where to put an element, whether that's text or a graphic or an icon or whatever it happens to be. And there is a way to do it by viewport. So I can say, my viewport is always 100 by 100. I don't care what the real screen size is.
Right.
But I can put something, 4 viewport 100ths in and 8 viewport 100ths down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, given the size of a viewport, that's going to be kind of in a different place. And real designers, that makes them crazy.
Yeah.
And I do get that. I do get that. But there, right now, it's so hard to say, I want something that will run and look good on a 4.7-inch screen, a 5.7-inch screen, a 10-inch screen, a 15-inch screen.
Yes.
I mean, cheese and crackers, at some point, you're stretching far enough, you're going to break something.
Yeah, I gotta.
Right. So, some apps will move fine. They'll be fine. They're mostly text, or they have an element maybe in the upper left corner, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be fine. It doesn't matter.
No,
but many of them are not that way, and are designed to look good on a specific screen size.
So that's where that issue is coming in. And I'm pretty sure that's the only issue that's holding them up. Because we know they've already solved the issue of running the apps because
it's in beta.
It's working. They just haven't moved it because of aesthetic reasons yet.
Yeah, and again, you know, depending on the app and how well it was written, that's the other thing.
Well, and that's just it. And so what they're saying to
there's not consistency across the board on that.
Right, and what they're saying to the people who've written the apps, this is the same thing exactly that Apple went through when they first brought out the iPad. These look like crap, so we have to make them, we either have to rewrite them or something. And at Apple, they decided rewrite. Google could turn around and say, we're changing the OS so that when you run an Android app, it runs in a separate window, not in the full screen browser window.
Yeah, make
but
a
in
different
a separate
default
window, and that window is whatever the size is, mm-hmm. right? And you can you can do it one of two ways. You can say, all right, the developer gets to pick the size. And if the developer didn't pick a size, then we'll default to X.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
it's fair.
Right. And it's not that it isn't doable. It's that it isn't done yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in whichever way they go, that would be the easiest way. And it might be the best way. I mean, we're all used to multiple windows on our screens.
Oh, yeah.
So that's not really an issue. And Alt-Tab works on Chrome. You can, just like you can take a tab on a Chrome browser and drag it down and it suddenly opens in a separate window, you can do that on a Chromebook as well. So you can have multiple windows mm-hmm. on a Chromebook as well as multiple tabs. And some apps like Keep open in their own separate windows as well. So it's not like the capability doesn't exist in the operating system.
Right.
So they just need to take advantage of that and I think we'll be...
Make it happen. And then that way, you know, like you say, the rest of the Chromebooks can start rolling out. And what you run on your phone, you'll be able to run now on your Chromebook. So, yeah, I'm still looking very much forward to it, you know, but I say until they get into it, I'd rather have it done right than get it out there and then tick people off because Chrome has such a good name to it. You know, I mean, it's very dependable.
Yep.
Folks don't have to worry about paying for an operating system. You know, it doesn't get viruses. It doesn't get malware. It protects itself. If something tries to invade and say, no, it checks it from a hidden example of what the Chrome unit should look like. And if they don't match, it says, nope, sorry, you're not getting changed. Bump.
And one of the most beautiful things about it that finally Microsoft and Apple are looking at doing as well is that it will update in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So if I updated yesterday, but had I not updated yesterday, while we were sitting here doing the show, it would have been downloading the updates in the background. I get a little thing in here that says, you know, restart to install. Or I don't have to restart to install. I shut it down. I go home. Next time I open it, it'll install it.
Do it then.
That'll take a minute. But generally speaking, that's not a problem. As long as I look down there and see the little up arrow that says, you know, time to restart, I'll know that that's going to happen next time.
Mm-hmm.
So the big thing about Chromebooks right now is that ability to run apps. And again, that's something that Microsoft can't really match as, let's be honest, the Windows Phone, not a lot of apps ever available for that.
That goes back to this, just their phone proves, you know, what I was saying at the beginning of the show with this new Windows 10 tablet, you know, it's, if there's not a lot out there, you know, and people aren't buying it, they're going to abandon it like they do too many other things.
Right.
And this is one of those products, they're coming on to the show too late.
Yep.
You know, they're trying to get on the bandwagon of, oh, well, they're all doing good. We're going to throw out our version.
Yep.
Yeah, no, sorry, they've already gone down the road, and they're 5 miles ahead of you, and you're not going to catch up. And if you try to, you know, make folks believe that, oh, this is great, no, they're not going to sell it. They're not going to be able to sell it.
And the first time it gets a virus,
yep,
People are just going to, because is there an antivirus for it, et cetera, et cetera.
They're going to find the holes, like I said before. Yep. They're going to find some holes in that operating system that it's going to be vulnerable to attacks. Yep. It's just plain and simple.
Yep. So we'll see. But there are, you know, we both are fans of Chromebooks.
Yeah.
But the main reason I'm a fan is because it is so easy and so convenient.
And it's reliable. I don't worry about it.
If it ever doesn't boot up, it's because the hardware is broken.
Yeah.
And you can just throw it away. Most of them are in the $200 range. That's not cheap.
No, but.
But compared to a laptop.
Yeah.
You know, it's half the price of a laptop or a third the price or a quarter the price mm-hmm. of a laptop. So if you know, I've gotten my 4 or 5 years of use out of it, I throw it away and buy a new one. I log in, and everything comes back just like it was on the old machine.
I know. I love it.
Well, I'll tell you right now, whenever I travel, I only take a Chromebook.
No.
I can do everything I need to do on it, and if it gets stolen, oh well.
No biggie.
Oh well. No. Yeah, so there's a bunch of reasons. And like I said, I'm at RIT. Our students are very, very, very tech savvy. And yet, about half my students are carrying Chromebooks because it's all you need to do what you need to do on a daily basis. They have very high-end machines in their dorms, but what they carry around are Chromebooks. All right, that music tells me that we're done again. You've wasted 2 solid hours of your life with this nonsense. I don't know what's wrong with you, but we're done for this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank everybody who called in. We appreciate your calls. We appreciate the help. My favorite part of this show is when people call in and answer other people's questions. None of us is as smart as all of us. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so the danger factor is low. And we'll be back in with a whole lot more next week of the longest running computer show in the known and unknown universe. We are Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Have fun.